Hello and welcome to the Skilding podcast. We believe that true deep learning occurs when three things happen. You must 1, understand, 2, remember, and 3, deliberately practice your newly acquired knowledge. This podcast covers the first part, understand. Complete this learning by getting the second and third part at skilding.com. So together, let's get the key takeaways from this book understood. Today I'm speaking with Fred Copestake, who is the founder of a sales training company called Brindis. You can find them at brindis.co.uk. And Fred's thing is all about partnership sales. So rather than, you know, and actually what he does in this episode is he steps through every decade from the 50s right up until today, the 20s, and picks out the best things about sales that we can use. And he partners that, or he combines that with partnership selling. A fascinating approach to sales. Huge amount of value I found in this episode. Fred is genuinely passionate about solving people's problems, and he's genuinely passionate about helping anyone he encounters understand that sales isn't about separating people from their money. It's about, you know, partnering with people and solving problems and of being of service to people. So enjoy this episode with Fred Copestake from brindis.co.uk. Hello, so I am here today with Fred Copestake. Fred, who are you? Why am I talking to you today?
Right, so my pitch, if you like.
Go for it.
My social pitch is, so I'm Fred Copestake, I'm founder of Brindis, which is a sales training consultancy. Over the last 23 years now, I've been around the world 14 times, worked in 36 different countries, trained over 10,000 salespeople.
Wow.
We are, honestly, a real privilege to do that.
Yeah.
A lot of fun, mate, a lot of fun. But what it's also done is it's allowed me to see what challenges salespeople have got to deal with. My job is to help them do that. And so that's why I wrote my first book, Selling Through Partnering Skills, to address that challenge and to get them up to speed with a more modern collaborative approach.
I have a question, first of all, before we get into the two books that you've written. What is it about sales and sales training that is interesting to you, or is what's fulfilling about it for you?
It might sound a little bit trite, but making a difference, having an impact. You know, it's when you see people have that aha moment. We used to do all the stuff in the classroom. But even more so now, it's when you know that people are taking stuff away, they're doing it, they're applying it. It's changing stuff for them and changing stuff for their customers. So yeah. I don't know if it's because I'm getting a little bit older and kind of purpose is becoming a little bit more important to me. But, you know, kind of being able to have that impact, it's a pretty big deal for me now.
I've said this before in the podcast that I started teaching to make money to get beer when I was like 19. So when I was in college, it was my mom's idea. I did electronic engineering in college. My mom said, why don't you give what we call grinds, you know, like private tutoring, you know, go to a kid's house on a Saturday morning and help them do quadratic equations kind of thing. And I remember thinking, gee, I suppose I could do that actually. Yeah. And I put up an ad in the local supermarket and got a few calls and I started doing it. But I realized really quickly that this is the thing for me, teaching. And like you said there, that aha moment or that light bulb moment is just, it's like, I've said this before as well, but it's like when the scissors goes through the wrapping paper, you know, like when it starts to glide, that feeling it's amazing. When I remember the first time I was explaining a quadratic equation to a kid who's probably, you know, 13 or 14, and I knew as I was talking that they're just kind of nodding along, like, oh, they don't have a clue what I'm talking about. And I remember thinking, oh, this isn't about me. I have to get it from my head into his head in a way that he's, and I had to set him up first of all to give him the confidence that you can definitely understand this. You can, I promise you, if you just work with me here and try, you'll get what I'm talking about. And I had to start, it's like I drew a line under it and I had to start all over again with them. But I had my own light bulb moment where I thought, this is, I get it now. This is what teaching is. It's not just I know it and look how great I am. I have to be of service to you and help you understand it and internalize it. And I moved away now from, I qualified as a maths and a physics teacher, and I did that for a few years, but I moved away then from that and moved into like more corporate stuff, which is, you know, what we're doing now. But that moment of that light bulb thing never left me. Like, that's my thing now. That is my purpose. So it's a great start that you're saying that's what your thing is as well.
It is. I mean, and there's other elements to it. I mean, I think, yeah, if we're going to fess up, I mean, yeah, when I first did it, a bit like you making beer money, it was also beer money, and actually it was quite a good laugh living in hotels and nice food, doing that. I mean, look, yeah, it might be the wrong reasons, but it very quickly, like you say, it's like, well, people are getting this stuff and they're not. I need to change what I'm doing here. I need to somehow explain it in a different way, or I've got to work out what it is that they need to make the difference. And that's also quite satisfying, and to sort of take that challenge to be able to go, right, yeah, I'll work that out and help them work it out.
Yeah.
And so going back to the books, that's why it's like, well, okay, I can keep doing this on individual sessions, or I can kind of go bigger and try to sort of get the word out there and the way in which people can go about stuff. So
that's the same thing we're doing with our platform as well, is that it's, I could be one person going into a company and talking, but I feel I'm capable of doing it on a bigger scale, and that's what I'm attempting. So, okay, so tell us about
that. It's funny, actually, it's quite apt you say that today, because I've just put a LinkedIn post out where and my headline was, "You're a mug." Because a mate said to me, because Fred, you're a mug. Because why do you do all these free webinars and stuff? I said, well, because quite often people have said, can you do another one? Because I want to invite my team. Well, there you go. You're an utter idiot. You must be costing yourself a load of business if you're doing their training for free. I'm like, well, no, because I'm getting the word out there.
Yeah.
You know, and that's important to me.
Yeah, it's the mission.
It leads to business as well. But actually, the mission-driven part of me, it's like, this is great. Yeah. The more the merrier.
Yeah, that's exactly it. Like, especially one of the, getting back to this idea of me teaching maths, I was terrible at maths in school. I was like all those kids that just could not get my head around what is the teacher talking about, X's and Y's and trigonometry this and algebra that. I could not figure out what any of it was. And then I got this teacher in my final year in school, basically, and it just suddenly just started to fall into place. It started to click. So when I went back then and started teaching it, I got excited because I was like, oh, I know exactly what you're thinking is happening here, but it's not that, it's this other thing. Now let me explain it to you. And I explain about the rules of it, and like, you have to write it out, like, and you have to get to the next step and the next step, and it has to be logical. And there's like, I remember being really excited going, I know exactly what you're thinking, because I used to think that, but this is the way you should be thinking about it. And I guess it's the same thing with sales, that anytime I've done sales, I've got it wrong 10 times before. I thought, oh, maybe actually if I tried this way instead, it could work a bit differently.
Yeah, well, but both sales, but again, also the training element of it, because one of the things I kind of spotted early on when I went into the consultancy, the training role, is that there were some consultants who would say a lot of stuff and it sounded really impressive. But then I would speak to people who've been on the training and go, God, he's really clever. And I said, well, why? And they go, oh, because he sort of says all these things. And I said, what's it mean? He goes, well, I don't know. We don't even know what. They're using big words and sounding very impressive, but actually having zero difference because people didn't understand them.
Yeah.
It was gibberish.
Yeah.
So being able to take stuff and put it into like, well, kind of, this is what it is in kind of simple speak, and this is how you do it. A bit like you, it's like, that's where you start to make the difference. And,
and
I'm happy enough to do that.
A lot of teachers are of the opinion, and I think it's not even a conscious choice that they're making, and even in presentations you see, like in the corporate world, well, I got through my slides, so teaching must have happened. You must have learned something because I'm finished all my slides and I said all the things I wanted to say. Rather than being, like I said at the start, rather than being of service to people and going, well, how do I make sure that they get this or understand this so that they can actually take something away and, like you said, put it into practice and use it.
Yeah, it's and when it all comes together, so it's hairs on the back of your neck stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
Well,
it's cool.
I've done some good there today.
I've done a fulfilling day's work. That's what So tell us about the two books, and which one do you want to talk about, or are we going to talk about both? Or
I mean, they sort of work together. It probably makes more sense to talk about the first one.
Okay.
Because that was the one where I'd sort of really had a look at kind of the challenges that salespeople face. categorized those in hopefully quite simplistic terms, and sort of worked out, well, this is the stuff we need to do to deal with that. So that's called selling through partnering skills. I wonder whether I should have called it collaborative selling, because that's actually what I'm preaching.
Yeah.
But partnering skills, PQ, which is the lesser known cousin of IQ and EQ, is central to it. Because if we think like a partner, now whether you're a partner or not, yeah, every salesperson should think like a partner, because it changes what you say and do. You've already mentioned the secret. Yeah, it's like to be of service to somebody, to try to work with them rather than try to sell to them.
Yeah.
That is what customers are demanding now. And so like I got these kind of, I can broadly summarize the challenges that salespeople have. So people listening to this, I'll ask them whether they're kind of one, two, or three here, where the first challenge, and I give them these funny little names because it just helps me remember stuff, but busy, 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 oldie worldy, and muddled mindset. They're the three challenges that you've probably got. Busy, 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 so that's where you're running around, doing loads and loads of stuff, you're kind of very active, yeah, highly kind of strung, I'm probably getting quite tired and quite stressed because the stuff you're doing isn't working because it's unfocused. It's about being ineffective. Yeah, a lot of people will be doing that. We can deal with that. I mean, oldie worldie doesn't really help here if you got this as well, because oldie worldie is using old-fashioned techniques. Yeah, so this is where you're kind of being very self-centered. Me, 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 we, my product,
yeah,
my service, our things, yeah. Which can also come out as with, I see this with engineers quite often, quite technical. So you get right down into the weeds in a whole bunch of technicality. And for some customers, that's important. Others are just like, oh, please stop. You're killing me with it. Yeah. Those tend to be, that's just passion usually, because people haven't been trained right.
Yeah.
Then there's this other one which just kept right on my wick, which is when it's just old-fashioned selling, you know, bygone era stuff, like, you know, manipulative, pushy, sleazy,
yeah,
you know, close stuff. I don't really like that. And then the muddle mindset thing is, I mean, individuals tend to have those two. The muddle mindset affects individuals, but it comes more from company, and that's where you kind of see this. Organizations often say, we're customer focused, yeah, we're consultative sales, we will help our customers, da da da. But what actually happens is they're like that for like 28 days. Come the end of the month, it's like, get out there and flush yourself. Start discounting, pull those deals in.
Yeah.
And they go transactional. Yeah. And the salesperson's like, am I consultative or am I transactional? I don't really know what I'm doing. Manager's like, am I coaching people to be this or am I like a spreadsheet bunger? Yeah. And like the salesman, I don't know what to do here. And it's, again, those things, and maybe people are listening going, oh my God, strike out. they happen. And we can deal with all those. There's solutions to every single one of those, the core of which is in how you're setting yourself up with it with a more modern approach.
You and I listen to podcasts for many reasons. And listening to a podcast like this probably means that you're looking to get insights about human psychology, motivation, persuasion, things like that. Well, if you're here to learn, listening is not enough. In fact, that'll get you one third of the way there. You will understand this topic. That's the first part. But secondly, you need to remember the most actionable content when you need it. It's what we call remembering it at the moment of truth. And thirdly, you'll need to find opportunities to deliberately practice this content. This episode has a suite of learning tools that you can use to help you do this. Just go to skillding.com and search for the title of this episode. Back to the show. Can I ask a question that might be jumping ahead now, but like, let's say there is somebody who is all for that consultative selling, the partnership way of doing things, and then like that, they're at it for 28 days and now, well, nobody has closed the sale or we have anywhere near our numbers. Is there a fine balance then between, okay, well, at some point you need to close the sale, or is it, do you just trust the process that we push out our targets, or what's the approach to that?
Yeah, I mean, you've used the expression, which it is quite common, isn't it? It's trust the process. It's, you know, do the things time and time again, which we know is going to work. And that is, it's going out, it's finding the right kind of customer, people that you do want to work with, starting to have intelligent conversations with them because you've done the right kind of research, then starting to know who in that organization you need to be talking to and getting the points across relevant to them, and then backing the stuff up with the right kind of presentations, proposals, proving the stuff that you're doing, and just keeping up that. And the more complex a sale, the longer that kind of takes. And, you know, as soon as we start becoming, well, I need to push this for my targets, that the shift has changed from the buyer focus, which we said we have, and kind of trying to align with their journey to, no, we're doing this for ourselves. And look, I get it. You know, we do have targets. We do have to sell and eat. But it's just about having the right amount of activity so that we can do that comfortably, customer's best interest in mind, serving them, and not getting ourselves into this flat panic because we're not getting enough.
So where do we start then? Talk me through the book, talk me through the process that you bring someone through in your training or coaching.
So if you've got in the book, the sections are, so what we're doing, if you think about those challenges, what we're doing to deal with the busy, it's about plan, prepare, and use process. So they're the things that we need to do. And there's things which we can train and we can share in how to do that well. I'll include some of the stuff in the book. To deal with the oldie worldy stuff, flip, follow, focus, flip the way in which you sell. Yeah, in other words, talk about the customer, their issues, their problems, their concerns, their challenges. Yeah. And follow a way of working that makes you do that rather than desperately try and cram your stuff in straight away. Solution selling actually isn't probably what as good as we think it is because you try too fast to go into your solution.
Yeah.
And so then focus on the things which work today. Because again, there's some old-fashioned techniques out there that don't work. And then with the kind of muddle mindset, it's about having clarity coaching and being confirmed in that you're doing the right things. So the organization has to be clear. This is how we work. Then the manager can then focus on coaching the right kind of ways of working. And so then we can go into like, okay, I know what I'm supposed to be doing now. I can make that decision. I can be comfortable as a salesperson. That's the right thing to do. So in the book, what I'm doing is saying, okay, so again, I'll go back to that. Think like a partner. I'll take people through the six elements of PQ, six elements of partnering skills. Now, this is, again, I'm not invented this stuff. This was developed by a guy called Steve Dent, late 80s, early 90s. Same time that Goldman would have been doing his EQ stuff, which has got much more publicity, but PQ for me is like, that's where the action's at for sales. Well, EQ is important for salespeople as well, emotional intelligence. Talk through that, because that's going to set us up with the right mindset. Okay, that's on one hand. Then what we can do is we can go through the evolution of sales. So I go back to the 50s and sort of go, right, if you look at each kind of decade, there was something that was hot in each of those. So we can take that, take the stuff that's still relevant, make the necessary tweaks, PQ, evolution of sales that still works, bring those together. Now, bring those together into the modern approach. So those two hands come together, and it's like that's the value framework, validate, align, leverage, underpin, evolve, which is how do you actually apply that? How can you put that into action at different levels of selling? So there's quite a lot in that book. I've thrown a lot at it.
Yeah, that's I really
maybe
like that.
A bit too much, but you know.
No, it's that's. I don't know what to ask next. I've so many questions. Can we start with the historic stuff? Like, so, say if you went back to the 50s, 60s, and 70s, what did you take from each of those then that's still relevant?
Sure. So let's go a little time travel, a little jaunt through time.
Go for it.
So, go in the 50s. And what I like about this is that the kind of the decades affected what was, you know, what was going on at the time. So if you go back to the 50s and you think what was going on about then, it was rebuilding. It's about being more effective. So when you looked at sales, it was all about process. It was having tried and tested methods. It was having good ways in which you can do the right thing time and time again. Well, I'm not going to argue with that today. Absolutely, it's what we train still. But what we need to say today is, well, look, some of those processes are still relevant, but there's others which didn't exist then because they were, well, like video. How do you construct a video message? How do you write a social media post? Those things didn't happen then. But again, the structure to them. We can tweak them and get it up to date. We jump into the 60s. 60s, I always think of it as like that kind of psychedelia, psychological era. There's this massive fascination with the brain, wasn't there?
Yeah.
And so this is all about psychology. So it's understanding people. You know, how do they think? What are their preferences? How can we adapt to that? So again, we totally use that today. You know, so using a DISC analysis or colors or whichever way in which you want to sort of think, how does somebody like information? How do I adapt to them? Brilliant. But again, there's some modern tweaks. You know, neuroscience, fMRI scans have given us a better insight into the brain than ever before. There's some tech which can tell you somebody's personality style before you've even met them. You know, like crystal nose or mantics or something like that. That stuff's freaky. Mm. But again, we can use that to make our approach better. 70s, jump into benefit sales, benefit selling. Yeah, customers ask, what they don't ask, but they should, but what's in it for me? We need to understand that what people are actually buying. But we don't need to get so excited about features. We've got to talk about the benefits. Now, I have many soapboxes, Kevin, but one of them is about that we sometimes give too much product training, and that's why people talk so much about products and features. Again, give the training an angle of to the benefits that people get, but even that is still a bit old-fashioned. We want to give them the insights that we can use to trigger the thinking to get that conversation about benefits being relevant. And that kind of more of a noughties approach. So keep going through. If we go to the 80s, well, 80s was close, wasn't it? Greed is good.
Yeah, Glenn Ross.
ABCs.
Yeah, ABC, always for Kelsen. Yeah.
It's like, what are we going to take from that era? we need to bin most of it.
Yeah.
That we can take. Yeah, forget the sort of the sort of silly closing techniques. But sales is a series of advancements. You know, we're always trying to make progress. We need to get commitment to the next logical step. Actually, that is still a solid way of thinking, so we can take that. But let's get into the 90s quicker, because 90s is that sea change in sales, which is consultative selling. You know, consultative selling. You know, when Neil Rackham and the team did all that research into what good salespeople were doing, found they were asking more questions. So they're asking more questions to understand what somebody's need was. Yeah, the questions were helping understand where are they now, where do they want to be, what's the implication of that not being the same thing. That implication is the need.
Mm.
So a good salesperson is able to ask questions in a way which helps people understand that. But that's 30 years old.
Yeah.
You know, people say, I'm a consultative salesperson. And when I'm feeling a bit spiky, I'll say, well, that's not enough anymore, is it? Look, what? Get a reaction. But if you think about it, even that has adapted, you know, challenger sale and things like that are ways in which you can apply that. Very good. And it is foundational. Don't get me wrong. This stuff is absolutely what selling's about. But we can tweak it. We can move it up a level. Noughties, you know, we were training value-based selling, so understanding what value is. Now, a lot of salespeople will define what value is and go and tell a customer. Wrong. The customer's definition of value is the way in which we should be working. So we've got to work out what they perceive it is, and then how can we start to make sure we deliver that. Yeah, we can have an idea, gives a starting point, but we need to go through the processes to understand that and help them to realize it. This is where we introduce insights, perspectives, we can share ideas, get them thinking better. There's a theme here, isn't there?
Yeah.
About helping people think.
Yeah.
The tens, so I was training the tens. And a phrase I used then was sales stature, which was kind of the way I was trying to describe positioning yourself as the go-to person. So doing things to get the reputation that people say, oh, yeah, this guy knows his stuff. That's who you want to deal with. Personal branding, I guess we'd call that now. But that didn't exist back then. But, you know, the concept certainly did. So that makes sense. We still need to do that. There's a bunch of ways which you can do that. You know, the platforms, the social media is definitely a way to do it. But again, another of my little soapboxes is that quite a lot of people seem to concentrate too much on the profile and all the stuff they're pumping out there and forget that really the personal brand is built on purpose and practice.
Hmm.
So actually, why are you doing stuff and are you actually doing it? Then talk about it, not just talk about it. Okay. Oh, you got me in a mood today. And then we get into the 20s, and that was the stuff I was talking about with, you know, so let's take all these good things, but then if we can think like a partner, we can, you know, use that mindset that PQ helps us use, we collaborate better with them. You know, we co-create, we work together, we're heading towards trying to achieve things which are mutually beneficial, we become independent, and it's just a smarter way for a salesperson to operate. It's who customers want to speak to. So it's quite a lot.
Book's
1,000 pages, mate.
Yeah, so I'm looking at everything there that you've said from the 50s up until the 20s now, And in my head, I think all of that, the umbrella over all of that is understanding the problem from the customer's point of view. Is that about right?
Yeah. And it kind of always has been, but we've just understood how to get better at doing that and being able to train people and help them to do that job better, which is then beneficial for them, beneficial to the customer. But a lot of salespeople don't want to get better at it.
Yeah.
It's like, well, why? Why would you not want to be taking the latest thinking to do this stuff to serve your customer, which is, it's going to benefit you as well. Why do you want to be the best you can?
Yeah. What about like cold emails and cold intros? I already know the answer to this, but I'm going to ask it anyway. Is there a one size fits all, or is there a perfect way of doing it, or is there things you should always do or not do, or how do you do it?
The thing we should always do is do it. Okay. That's a bit of a weird answer, in that the conversation has to start somewhere. I think where we're going now is that, whether it is, maybe it is one size fits all, in that we want to be as personal as we possibly can be. it's not one size fits all. No, it's, you can't just write one thing and it's going to have this immediate effect. It's probably going to have less of an effect. But if the size is, well, actually really take your time to think about the individual, the issues they've got, the challenges you're dealing with, that you can reach out with a bit of personalization that's relevant, not just, hey, I saw on LinkedIn that you like cats. Yeah, so what? But I saw you like cats and your cat was doing this, which probably means that, you can build a bridge into what it is you're doing. Now that does work. And when you think like that and it's becoming that personalized, that it's via email, via video, which could be an email, could be over LinkedIn, by the phone call, WhatsApp, whichever media you use to communicate in that, if you're demonstrating you get that person and that you could be of use to them, value to them, because you're going to help them think about stuff, that's the way to operate, I'd say.
Okay. I'm being quieter because I'm trying to sort out my questions in my head. Say more stuff. How about that, Fred? You keep talking. Tell me what else we need to know about sales. Say we take it from a cold email or cold intro that we've made. What do you do then? What's the process?
Okay, so I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll skip you through the value framework that's in the book.
Okay.
But people aren't going to have to buy it after this. Cool. but you know what? Going back to what we said, in some ways, I don't really care. Yeah. If the message is out there and people are using this stuff, then fantastic. I'm happy, you know?
Yeah.
So the value framework, VALUE, gives us the acronym where we start off by validating. So validate, old-fashioned terminology might be qualify. This is looking for the right kind of business, the people that we want to work with, people that we can have impact with, yeah, where we're going to make a difference. It's kind of your ICP, perfect customer thing, but kind of just adding this other level to it where, well, you know, how are they going to respond to my style of wanting to collaborate with them? It takes two to tango. So we kind of put in this psychological qualification to make sure we're working with the right kinds of business where we can work like this. So that we can, you know, start to reach out, or we can start to align what it is that we're going to do. That's the A. So align is about doing your homework. It's about kind of understanding how they make decisions, who are the key people, what challenges are going on in their world. How can I start to get some thoughts together and some interesting bits that they might or might not realize that I can use to inform intelligent conversation? So if we haven't reached out, then we've certainly got something to reach out then, whichever media, because we need to set up the conversation to leverage that stuff that we've got and that's going to help them. So that's the L. So this is like having a good structured call. It's asking the right questions. It's bringing that levels of insight into what we're doing. It's challenging when required. It's kind of having that stuff that's helping them to think. Yeah, said it already. Say it again. When we do that, it can then move us into the U for underpin piece. So this is underpinning our sales argument. I like to talk around a three-legged stool, which is resonate, substantiate, and differentiate. resonate? Are we on the same wavelength? You know, is it making sense to them? Yeah. Are they hearing it right? Does it sound good? Substantiate. Can we back that up? Can we prove it? You know, have we got the ROI? Have we got case studies, success stories? Salespeople hate case studies. I don't even call them that anymore. Tell people stories. We like stories. Stories are way better, you know?
Yeah.
Which is a case study, really. But just frame it as a story, you know? We like hearing stories. It's how we're designed. You've done a load of podcasts on this.
Yes, I have. Yeah?
Because it's cool stuff.
Yeah.
And then differentiate. And just being different isn't a differentiator. Like another soapbox. It's like, oh, yeah, but we're different. Yeah, but the customer doesn't care about that, so it's not a differentiator. No, what it is, because, no, if they don't care, if it's not relevant, it's not. It's got to be something that's different enough that sets you apart in a way that's meaningful to them. So that's how we should tee that up. Again, there's modern ways in which we can do that. I'm having a look at kind of digital proposals, so like landing pages with videos and things in and sharing resource in a kind of a funky way. Mutual action plans, again, it's another thing. We can have like kind of live documents showing who's going to do what and how we're going to implement that to make a difference.
The proper partner again, like.
Well, all this sort of stuff. And it's like, well, yeah. They're not paid to do that. You're telling them how to do it. Well, yeah, I am. Because if I'm going to tell them how to do it, they are more likely to come to me to do it. And if they go somewhere else, well, okay, that's the risk I'll take. But really, you're so far down the line, you're giving this stuff. They want to work with you.
Yeah.
You're part and parcel. Because you can't put those things together without them being on board.
Do you know what it reminds me of? Just to interrupt
there.
And
then ears evolve. Well, ears evolve. So ears that you promise them results. You're going to deliver on that. Make sure you deliver on that. And that's going to, in turn, hopefully make more opportunities. So,
great. I love that framework. It's nice and simple. Everything you're saying there reminds me of a book, one of the first books I think we did in the podcast, To Sell as Human by Daniel Pink. I think it's in that book he talks about the salesman in America, like the Mentos, I think he was selling the chewy mints, or could be Skittles, I can't remember, but they were trained in a particular way to not push their product. They were trained to go into like the corner shop or the news agents, whatever it was, and talk about the entire display. You need some more Maltesers here, or you need to, you know, these sell better if they're beside this other thing, and not just be pushing their Mentos or their Skittles, whatever it was that they were selling. So that when and again, I always love this idea, because from the shop owner's point of view, they're not going, oh, Jesus, not this guy again in trying to push a Skittles on me or whatever. They'd welcome him because this guy knows his stuff and he's positioned himself as the expert and an authority. And maybe, hopefully, my Mentos or my Skittles, whatever it is, will become part of your solution. It's like, to be honest, it's like you. Like, you don't really care whether somebody buys the book or not. Just do this stuff. This is... And the thing that underpins everything you're saying there is that you are an authority on this. So, and if people want to know more, they'll come and find you.
They will, you know, and then that's why, you know, again, thanks for inviting me on this, because I can share more stuff. And some people will hopefully hear and go, oh, yeah, sure, I will reach out. Mm. And some people will take this stuff and do it. I mean, yeah, cool. I mean, just let me know you have.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
You know, that's why we do it. But yeah, To Sell This Human is an awesome book. I quoted it yesterday.
Really?
Yeah. I was talking to a bunch of students about what sales is. And again, sometimes we need to reframe the image that selling has to what it actually is. And that's why I use that book as an example and recommend that they read both that and Drive.
I have Drive, actually. I didn't read it because I had somebody else read it for me who can do it on the podcast. So that was another great book. And I have another one of his. Show it to you here. If I haven't read yet. The Power of Regret. Have you read that one?
Oh, I thought you were going to say when, because you've not had time. The irony would be too good.
another thing in that book, when you said earlier on about calling your book Collaborative Selling, and again, I think it was in To Sell as Human, where he talked about the different car sales, and the old-fashioned guys were doing it like being the gatekeepers of the information, rather than realizing that there's just information parity these days, and you know, people come in, they've already done their research on a particular car, and he was talking about the new way of selling, or there was some other like car sales company that did that collaborative thing where they literally turned the screen towards the customer, and like it's such a it's such a subtle thing to do, but it makes so much sense to kind of like, well, it's me and you together now. Let's figure this out together rather than me looking at all the information on the screen. I'll show it to you and I'll point to this and I'll say, maybe you could think about this or think about that. Like, or because you know the person already has all the information on the car. There's no point trying to be the gatekeeper to the information because you just come across as sleazy then. Or that old, another thing in that book is the word cloud that he had about, you know, what's the number one word you think of. And the big one was pushy, that, you know, when you think of a salesperson, what's the one word you think of? And he asked like 3,000 people and the word that came out of that was pushy. So
it's massive, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's huge.
Well, it has been one of the elements of PQ, the partnering skills, is trust, you know, the ability to build trust.
Yeah.
And, you know, to be transparent is one of the best ways to do that. I don't know, have you spoke to Todd Capone about the transparency sale?
No.
Oh, it's awesome. Todd's great. So he talks about the transparency sale, about how being transparent is a smart thing to do. And for a lot of salespeople, it's counterintuitive, because one of the things he mentions is that you lead with a flaw. Lead with a flaw. Mm. So you talk about the stuff you might not be good at.
Yeah.
And most salespeople are like, no, I'm going to, you know, car sales is what I always think. You know, this is a ding on the car. Stand in front of it.
Yeah.
Hope they don't notice it. I'll never see that. Yeah. You know. Whereas actually what he would be saying is like, well, take it. As you can see here, look, this car's got a little ding here.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay,
yeah.
Well, look, don't worry about that, because we can take that out. But the reason I want to show you is that it's so good for you in every other way.
Mm.
Now your defenses are down straight away. You're thinking, well, this guy's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Why would you show me something that's wrong with it?
Yeah.
Very clever psychological move that's kind of embedded in the science. Why would you have done that? Yeah, because I want to be dead open with you.
I want you to have all the information. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a really good one. Trust is such a huge thing. For all, do you know what actually I was watching last night? And I have a real problem with it. It's The Apprentice.
Oh.
The Apprentice, like, I used to, if you didn't know anything about business and you looked at The Apprentice, you would think that's what business is. Like,
yeah.
And there's people like, and even Alan Sugar's like, his attitude is kind of like, just sell any old shit to anyone. And sure, look, all that matters is making some money. Like, and these people go in and they're set up to fail. Like, I went on a whole rant. My wife had to listen to it last night and she actually agrees with me, but they're set up to fail in these tasks. And their approach is just make money at all costs. That's all that matters. And if you were listening to that, you would think, God, I would hate to be in business. But really, when you think about it, it's like you're saying, it's just trust and other people and, you know, having a bit of fun with people and genuinely trying to solve their problem. And if you can't, well, then maybe you could recommend me to someone else who might have the problem, and sure, look, we'll keep going. Like, it's a lot of fun, and it's very, very gratifying to be in business when you're working with other human beings. Like, they're just people who are just getting through life and, you know, trying to have fulfilling days as well. Like, it's, and you look at something like The Apprentice, you think, that is so far away from what business really is. It really annoys me.
Yeah, I think my wife had a similar lecture last night as well. Who also agreed, but once you're on a roll, you can't stop.
No, I get it. And another thing.
And it wasn't just that I get it, shut up. It was, no, I can see it. I watched it with you. Yeah. It wound me up too. And the worst one, they didn't do any, inverted commas, negotiation last night.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because when they do, it's not, it's haggling.
Yeah.
And there's no give and take. There's no swaps. There's no kind of strategy. Nothing. It's just shouting.
Yeah,
at
just
people.
Keep
it's
saying, like, lower numbers.
Please stop calling that negotiation. Yeah. Stop calling pitching, where you're just talking nonsense.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, it comes just after Dragon's Den, where actually you've got proper people who are like serious about solving issues and who put a thoughtful pitch together with like the right arguments, so again being asked intelligent questions to get to the core of whether
digging
it
in,
is
like,
a good idea or not. Yeah, you know, it's like it's chalk and cheese and all. Oh, it's all good stuff.
I was on Dragon's Den in Ireland many years ago, about 12 years ago now. It was an interesting experience. It was I had a company selling chutney, right? So we used to make, I mean, this whole story about me and a friend of mine, we were like a couple of Del Boy and Rodneys going around to car boot sales, and we sold all of our childhood, I've told the story before, sold all our childhood toys, and I'd moved into the house I'm in now, and my mom had said to me, you can clear out your old bedroom, otherwise I'm throwing it all out. And I was like, oh, they're all my toys from my childhood and whatever. So I took them all, and they're in a pile in our spare bedroom here, And my wife was like, well, they can't stay here. Like, you know, what are you going to do with them? So me and a friend of mine went, we sold them all and made all this money. Look, we made a few hundred euro, not much. But we took all that money and we bought ingredients and pots and jars and got T-shirts made and stuff, and went to the farmer's markets and started selling. And we could, two of us were really into cooking, so we were making like pasta sauces and chutneys and stuff, you know. And, kind of like, I suppose, like Alan Sugar would say, like, you know, see what's selling or smell what's selling, whatever it is that he says. And we would see that the chutneys were selling really well, like, and, you know, people like spicy and they liked sweet stuff and they liked, you know, a bit of something a bit quirky. And anyway, we settled on three different chutneys, and we started approaching local shops then. And I hadn't a clue how to sell. I remember walking into, there's a chain of shops here, a supermarket called Super Value, which is like the big one. And they're all over the country, it's hundreds of them. And I remember walking into my local Super Value with these three jars going, I don't know what to do. And suddenly, like, the panic hit me, like, of, I found the manager on the shop floor, and I remember walking up to him going, I haven't thought about what to say. I don't know what I'm doing. Like, and I stand there, like, just these three jars like this going, we sell these. And he's like, what? And, like, we just, the jars, we sell the things. It's like, I don't know what you're talking about. And he's kind of like walking away from me, like, it doesn't matter. And I remember sitting back into my car then with a notebook and pen. And it was like a real, it was a natural thing for me to do. Oh, that was horrendous. How can I make the next one 1% less horrendous? And I remember thinking, well, to begin with, I walked up behind him and scared the shit out of him, like, while he's trying to, you know, put things on the shelf or talk to his staff, whatever. Like, and I was horrendous. I just, like, I'm sweating now just thinking about it. But okay, next time I won't walk up behind him. I'll go down and go up the next aisle and meet him face to face, I remember thinking. And I remember I need to have an opening sentence because I was tripping over my words. I needed to have, think about, why would he care? Why does he give a shit about what I'm talking about? So I just did this like 50, 60, 70 times. I drove all around Ireland doing this, and just kind of like psyching myself up in the car going, it doesn't matter if this goes sideways, at least you're trying, you know, kind of, you know, give myself pep talks. But I got to the point with that, with those samples that I was giving out, that I had this little like corrugated cardboard box, like with three little windows in a kind of cute little box you get at Christmas, you know, like with the things. And I had the three jars in that. I had a little tiny packet of crackers slotted in behind it, a flyer, business card, three little spoons, a napkin, even. It all kind of slotted in there. And I'd walk up to the manager, I'd find him, and I'd say whatever the line was. And I knew that they had a certain amount. I figured all this out, that they had to buy like 95% of their stock from what they call central listing. So their main, you know, supplier, which is like their main warehouse. But 5% they could buy from local suppliers, and they could do like a little display and stuff. So I would have a little 30-second pitch for this. And I would say, you know, blah, 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 bring those home, try them out. I'm going to give you a call next week. Knowing that they don't have time for this, and it was all in one little package, they could just carry it around, put it into their office, whatever. And I remember thinking that this isn't the sale. This is the introduction. And the sale happened in the next two or three or four calls. And once I got that, and once I kind of learned the what I said at the start there about understanding it from their point of view, if you look at a shop manager in a supermarket, they're always busy. The really good ones are always walking fast. They're fixing things in the shelves. They're talking to the teenagers who work there. They're, you know, figuring things out for the customers. They don't have time. They and once I understood that they don't have time for me, that, you know, giving them a 20-minute pitch, I was like 30 seconds, 45 seconds in and out. And knowing that I can be a solution for you, I know you have to have a certain amount of stuff from local suppliers or Irish kind of, we were like a cutesy kind of startup. And I remember thinking, I can make your life easier by just supplying this stuff to you. So anyway, that's when I went on Dragon's Den, was with that. And we ended up in, you know, 200 shops around Ireland, and we had like a distributor and outsourced production and all that. But it was actually on Dragon's Den, while they were all deciding whether they're going to invest in it or not, I remember thinking, I hope they all say no, I don't want to do this anymore. It was like the pinnacle of it, like right on national television. I was thinking, I hope you all say no, because I don't want to do this. This isn't, I figured out the sales. I figured out taking something from, you know, spinning something up from my childhood toys into, you know, being on national television with a half decent product, thinking, oh, it's kind of it's as far as I kind of wanted to go with it. So they all did say no, which is, you know, sounds like sounds like a defensive thing, but I was kind of like, yeah, this isn't going anywhere.
I love that story. I've not heard that. I mean, I listen to quite a lot of your stuff. I've not heard that. But again, looking, you know, deconstructing it, the hard yards, the reps, the stuff to get to that point where you go, when I talk about stuff that's relevant to them and that shows that I've done my research and that it does fit and it helps them achieve something they've got to do, that's when I'm getting a response. Oh, when I present it in a way that shows that I've thought about it, so I've, you know, got this neat little taster set.
Yeah.
So that's giving them an element of trust. Got it. You know, it's that's how we need to be doing things today. So so much stuff in sales, it's not massively new. I mean, I talk about the modern approach, but it's those tweaks in this stuff, you know, 'twas ever thus, but we got these other little things that we need to be doing now.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, and I think a big thing for salespeople, if you think back to that ABC from the 80s of always be closing, there's awful pressure then to try and close every single time you talk to a person. But really, what you're trying to do is just build that trust, build a relationship, find out, do I have the solution to your problem? I might not. And if I don't, I might be able to recommend somebody else for you. I like helping people solve their problems. I like making people's lives easier. It might be my product, but it might not be.
It is, isn't it? It's like, you know, the close, if we must call it that. I mean, I prefer gaining commitment. It's gaining commitment to the next step.
Exactly,
which is, I'll leave this box with you.
Yeah.
Have a taste. I'll come back in a week and I'd love to get your feedback.
Yeah.
You know, so that's a proper step rather than a, will you do something? I might do. Oh, great. Yeah. That's an advancement. We don't want we want advancements. We do want advancements, but we don't want continuations.
Yeah.
You know, it's got to be something that is moving it forward distinctly. Now, whether that's selling chutney to shops, whether it's selling great big computer systems to multinationals,
yeah,
same things apply. Some cycles are a bit longer, some are a bit shorter.
Yeah.
And sometimes, you know, something isn't right for somebody. And as you say, you might put them in the right direction. And one of the things I've noticed on Dragon's Den that they've done a couple of times this year is they've said, I'm not going to make you an offer because I don't think it's right for you. It's too early.
Yeah.
I don't want to take any of your business because the business you've got is a lifestyle business and you'll get yourself a really nice way of working that you shouldn't be sharing with somebody else.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is, again, that more considerate way of thinking about the other party involved, like a partner.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree with that, that you solve people's problems is really what you're trying to do. Like you're not trying to separate people from their money. You're trying to help them get what they want. Is that who, there's some guy, I don't know, one of those famous self-help guys that if you help everyone else, help enough people get what they want, you'll get what you want. I think it was Jim Rohn maybe or somebody. Have I got that right?
Well, no, and that makes sense. I mean, what we're saying from the sales point of view is, I mean, yes, you could run around helping everybody do everything. Well, great, but we haven't really got time for that. And you do have to eat and look after yourself at the end of the day. But what you're doing is saying, when it comes down to this thing, I am in a position that I'm more than likely to be able to help you.
Hmm.
You know, so I might go to a company and they might have, I don't know, really dirty windows. Silly example. I suppose I could clean them for them, but it's not really what I'm best at.
Yeah.
If they want to get their sales better, well, absolutely, I'm in the position to do that.
Yeah.
And I can have conversations around what's going on in their sales now, where they want to be, some of the stuff that's going on that they might not be aware of, how that might look for them, what that could then turn into. That's a better use of all of our time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, if whatever comes out of that isn't necessarily my solution, but it's, I'll tell you what you need to go and speak so-and-so, I'll do that, you know?
Yeah.
But more often than not, it will lead towards the solution because I've picked where the conversation is going to be. So who I'm going to have the conversation with, because I've figured that actually it's probably that issue that they've got.
Yeah.
Busy, 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 oldie, worldie model mindset. I mean, it's every sales organization in the world. But but there is a certain market that I can do better in and I prefer working in, and that's who I'll want to work with. You know?
Yeah, and that's exactly it. Like knowing your niche or knowing what you're good at, and then when the time comes, not being a wallflower about it, not being confident and going, oh, I can, if that's your problem, then I can definitely solve that problem for you.
Yeah. Good at and enjoy doing.
Yeah, exactly.
Some things you could be good at, not necessarily like doing, but it's good at, enjoy doing, yeah, and get paid for it. I mean, you get those three things overlapping, happy days.
Yeah.
That's what we all aspire to do, isn't it?
What else do we need to know about selling? Tell us a bit about hybrid selling, that book.
Okay, so...
Am I opening a can of worms there now by asking that?
Well, no, yeah. It's just got to, yeah. It's success and failure at the same time. Yeah. Tragicomedy, I don't know what it is. No, so the story behind that is that I... So selling through partnering skills came out in 2020.
Oh, nice.
Same... Yeah, exactly. Same time as you know what, yeah, you know? Now, it doesn't make it any less relevant. It would make it probably more so as it happens.
Yeah.
But what I was then looking at, you know, my brain is wired to fix things and help people, is like, oh, wow, a bunch of challenges. So I've just addressed a bunch of challenges.
Mm.
Now, a bunch of challenges which were further down the road are now upon us. It's happening now straight away. And other challenges that will happen will be on us faster as well. So actually, I probably need to add another layer of the things which people should be thinking about to keep themselves relevant, future-proof themselves, because these changes are big. We ain't going back, you know? And I couldn't go anywhere anyway. We were all locked down, weren't we?
Yeah.
So I thought, right, okay, let's write again. You know, let's get this stuff out, because it was kind of very clear to me. It just, I could see this is the model. This is the stuff which people need to be getting their heads around to make sure that they are going to, you know, I use these words, and they're strong, you know, to stay relevant, to be useful to customers, to make sure that, you know, they're future-proofed. So, yeah, I just pen to paper again, so to speak, which was kind of cool. Yeah, so, and so that's what it is. And it's the way I talk about stuff in that is that some people, there's a really lame definition for hybrid selling I was also pushing back against.
Mm.
People say, oh, hybrid selling, it's when you're doing stuff face-to-face and when you're doing stuff online.
Yeah.
No, that's not that. That's virtual selling. Yeah. And actually, there's nothing massively new in that, because people have been doing it anyway. It's just that it's more popular now. Let's not make a big deal of that. Hybrid selling, let's reclaim the term. And hybrid selling, hybrid's a mix. It's like mixing the approaches and the things that you can do to make sure you're valuable. So the analogy, if you like, is that if you imagine a drummer and they're sort of sat tapping away with one drumstick on a little snare drum, it's not a great performance, is it? You know, it might pass muster, but it's not really going to impress anybody. Look at a rock drummer. You know, they've got the full drum kit, yeah, with like different sized drums. They've got the cymbals. They've got the different things to make noise, and they can play each one, and they're sort of bashing away and doing all their thing. I mean, I went to Motley Crue.
Oh, nice.
Tommy Lee. Tommy Lee's the drummer, isn't he?
Yeah.
So the drum kit's not the back, it's in the middle.
Yeah.
He's the star.
Front and center.
It was in this massive ring of light as well.
Yeah.
Where, and the drum kit's huge. It's really big. But at one stage, this ring, it started moving back sideways in this ring of light. It's like, he's going sideways, left, right. He's going higher and higher up this ring. So he's like, really? And he ended up upside down in this ring of flashing light, drumming away.
Jesus.
I mean, it was an amazing performance. And kind of the analogy is, yeah, be like Tommy Lee with yourself. No, but it's like, you know, it's having all of that stuff at your disposal to be able to do the very best thing for your audience, which is what he was doing. And actually, the analogy got even better, because when he came back down, he then got up, went and got someone from the audience and strapped them in beside him and did it again.
Wow.
So actually, he was literally doing it with the audience beside him. I thought, well, I didn't think at the time, well, that's a great sales analogy. It's one that figured later.
Yeah.
But that's what the hybrid selling is. So it's like, yeah, we've got the model within that. Now, the first element of the model is that you've got to, like, sell collaboratively, funny enough. Who'd have thought? But then there's these other things that actually, yes, you're thinking like that, your mindset's like that, you're working like that, but we then stack these other things into your approach. You're now a solid, useful, relevant salesperson. And so that's why I did that. Changed up the style of writing a little bit, did stuff a little bit differently, because I'd learned some stuff. And that went to bestseller, so I'll touch off with that.
Nice, yeah, fair play to you. What's the final message then, Fred, if you wanted to leave people who are a bit unsure about what sales or what it is or how to approach it, what would be your final message to them?
Okay, so I also said a couple of things. So, I mean, I've probably repeated, but think like a partner. Yeah, so use those partnering skills to like consider the other party as your partner. Even if it's not a full-on business alliance, think like a partner. Because for me, what it boils down to, and I sort of say this quite a lot, is that sales today, it's about having good people doing good things in a good way. Get that right, and you know, we're all going to be happy.
Excellent. Fred, where can people find you if they want to get in touch?
LinkedIn is the best option always. Connect with me. Ping me a message, say that you'd heard this. That'd be useful. I can feed that back to Kevin too.
Excellent.
And look, if you've got any questions, please fire them in. I've got some resources and stuff I'm happy to share. So yeah, you know, do that.
Cool. Thanks, Fred. Appreciate you being on the podcast.
Nah, thank you for inviting me. Really enjoyed it.
Hey, before you go, just a quick message about Skilding and what we're all about. We believe that true learning happens when you understand, remember, and deliberately practice your newly acquired knowledge. This podcast just covered the first part. You now understand the key takeaways from this book. To help you remember them, we will send you three interactive summaries that accompany this episode to empower you to remember the key takeaways at that moment of truth. To really embed the knowledge from this episode, you can use the dedicated and completely private digital portfolio to set a time and a date to go out into the big bad world and deliberately practice the key takeaways covered in this episode. For all this and for all of our podcast episodes, head over to skillding.com, that's skillding.com, and search for the title of this episode. Until next time.